This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
You're listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of The Bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Coming up on today's podcast, I'll talk with Mark Feinsand from MLB Network at MLB.com about the start of the Major League season, including a lot of talk about the Guardians and how they stack up in the AL Central. In just a moment, though, we're going to talk with Mark about Shohei Ohtani and the fact that it just kind of feels weird to me that people are rooting for him to be guilty in this situation. I don't want him to be guilty. Now, maybe that's clouding my judgment. I look at the situation, it seems so obvious he had nothing to do with this because his name's all over it. It was easy to, there were no dots to connect. And with all the money on the line, there's no way this guy is dumb enough to make it that easy to get caught. So clearly, it seems to me, without having all the facts at this point, that his translator is the bad guy here. I don't think there's any doubt about it, and I'm surprised people don't all see it that way. But listen, time will tell, and I'll be curious to see what Mark Feinsand has to say about it. But I don't want him to be guilty, and I don't think he is. We shall see. Make sure you check out the Bet Rivers app. Check out the Bet Rivers website. Starting tomorrow, obviously on Thursdays, I do a live show at 2 p.m. And starting this Thursday, I'll be giving you a Adam the Bull prop bet special on baseball. I love picking baseball games. I want to help you win some money, and I'm going to do my best to do that. So that'll start tomorrow. Be on the lookout for that. All right, we come back. We'll be joined by Mark Feinsand, national baseball writer, MLB.com, MLB Network. That's next right here in the Bullpen with Adam the Bull.
You're in the Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, we are back here in the Bullpen with Adam the Bull. We're joined by Mark Feinsand, MLB.com, MLB Network. Mark, thank you for joining me. How are
you? My pleasure. How are you doing? Good.
I'm doing great. You know, I was just before this last break, I was talking about the Shohei Ohtani thing. And, it's funny because it feels like a lot of people around the country are rooting for him to be guilty in this situation. And that bothers me. Do you get that sense too? Maybe not baseball people, but like.
Certainly not the people I've been talking to. I mean, I think maybe some Dodger haters are, hoping that somehow he isn't in the middle of their lineup, but I don't think that's going to happen. At the end of the day, we don't know what's going to happen here. It's hard to speculate. I think based on what we know right now, there are some questions that need to be answered, but we haven't heard anybody come out and say, anybody, even off the record background, say, we think he bet on baseball. We think he was the one betting. We think Ipe bet on baseball. And I think ultimately this is something where, there's a federal investigation going on. There's an MLB investigation going on. Everybody wants answers right now, but that's just not the way these things work. And we'll get the answers eventually. But, I think right now for the good of baseball, there's nobody who should want this guy to be, found guilty of anything that's going to potentially take him off the field because he's the most exciting player in the game, even when he's not pitching.
That's 100%. I agree with everything you said. You had a good line yesterday when you were on MLB radio. I heard you say, fortunately for you, you don't have a lot of experience with federal investigations. So you don't
these
things take time. We know the government does not work quickly. So we get it here.
Nor should it, right? I mean,
no,
we want
of course.
To be thorough investigations.
Yes.
We don't want anybody from a federal investigation or a league investigation jumping to conclusions. You want to talk to everybody you need to talk to and find out what happened. So, I don't think this isn't going to be a thing where we're looking at April 15th and we say, all right, well, we know everything now.
You know, some people are like, how could he have been suckered? I think of it as this guy apparently, I don't know, but everything I've read is that this guy was like his best friend. One of my closest friends is my money guy. He handles my retirement accounts. If he asked me for some information on my account, I wouldn't think twice about giving it to him. It was a good friend. you know? And it's like, I think about this and I say, Ohtani, his name was connected to this too easily. He would have to be the dumbest person on the planet to have actually done this and made it. Like, he's got enough money and enough people in his life that if he were gambling like this, he'd have 13 go-betweens. I just don't think it would be that easy to have his name connected to it if he were actually doing this. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think going back to the financial part of it, you know, does anybody think that at the end of every month, Shohei Ohtani is sitting down with his checkbook and writing bills, writing out his bills? I mean, somebody does this for him. Right. Apparently that might have been Ipe. I don't know. But the idea that, you know, somebody handled his sort of monthly or weekly or whatever financial situations is not far-fetched to think that, you know, that somebody in his position would have somebody else handling that. If it was Ipe and he had access to his accounts, then you could see how this kind of thing could happen. But again, I've really tried to stay out of the speculation on this because it doesn't really do anybody any good. No. It just, you know, I don't know any more than what I've read, and what I've read is not coming from actual federal investigations. So, you know, I heard Ohtani's statement the other day. He seemed sincere. You'd have to think. He came out very matter-of-factly and said, I did not know about this. You know, this all caught me by surprise and I feel betrayed, et cetera. If he's lying, that's going to come out.
Yeah.
And he knows that,
yeah.
Right? He knows there are federal investigations. He knows the league's doing an investigation. He puts himself in a really bad spot.
That's
if
true.
He comes out and says, this is all a surprise to me and I knew nothing. And then we find out that he did. That probably hurts. Forget whether he gets suspended, fined, whatever. He's not going to get suspended unless he was betting on baseball, right? I mean, we think. The precedent here, Jared Cozart, 2015 with the Marlins, was found to have been betting illegally on other sports, and he got fined. That's the precedent here. But even just off the field, if Ohtani is outed as being a liar, that statement you made was a flat-out lie. Now all of a sudden, endorsement deals, sponsorships, all these things, that's going to come into play. It's hard for me to believe. Listening to him the other day, I tend to believe what he said.
You know, on the field, that threesome in order of Betts, Ohtani, and Freeman, I mean, that's absurd. It's got to be one of the greatest in the history of the sport of three guys in a row.
It's pretty darn good. There's no question about that. I mean, I think back to my youth when I was a big San Francisco Giants fan. I think about that 89 team with Will Clark and Kevin Mitchell won MVP that year. Matt Williams, that was pretty fearsome.
Yeah.
I mean, just look in New York right now. Judge Soto and Stanton's a pretty good 1-2-3. There are some really good, you know, trios in the sport right now and historically, but it's hard to imagine that, you know, Betts, Freeman, Ohtani, who between them have four MVP awards, it's hard to imagine that's one much better than that one.
Mark, I want to get to the AL Central. You know, I've been working in Cleveland now for a long time, and the fans here are so frustrated right now. When this team went to the World Series in 2016 and they won over 100 games the next year in 2017, you know, the payroll was at a decent number for those years. But now they've got, I think, the 27th or 28th payroll in the league. They essentially spent no money this offseason. Their biggest free agent acquisition was Austin Hedges to be the backup catcher for $4 million. The Guardians clearly have the best pitching staff in the AL Central, but there are so many holes in the lineup. How do you think they stack up in what is a winnable Central division?
Well, I think that's the key word there, winnable. This division, I just started to put together my predictions for the season, which I will put out on social media, and then 6 or 6.5 months from now be brutally mocked for them because they'll be terrible. And honestly, the AL Central was the toughest division. The two Central divisions to me were the toughest divisions out there.
Yeah.
I think you could legitimately make a case for all five teams in the AL Central. You could make a reasonable case for any one of them to win this division. And
wow, even the White Sox?
You know, look, after trading Cease, you'd say, well, there's no way the White Sox. But you know what? You look at their lineup. It's not an untalented team. And if they're sitting in a situation in mid-July where the division's sort of everybody's middling in that, you know, 500, a couple games under range, and it looks winnable, who's to say they can't go out and
I guess you're right.
make a trade or two. Look, I'm not picking the White Sox. I'm actually picking the White Sox probably to finish last in the division.
Yeah.
I think they're the toughest case of the five.
Sure.
You know, the Twins have obviously had success. I don't love their offseason. Losing Sonny Gray didn't help. I love Pablo Lopez. I think he's a true budding ace in the making. I had him on my Cy Young ballot last year. So I think the Twins certainly have a case. The Guardians, like you said, have the best pitching top to bottom in the division. The Tigers are this year's kind of trendy central pick. Some of these young players, if they can take that step forward with Torkelson and Green, et cetera, Colt Keith's going to be there. So there's intriguing, reasons to think that any of these teams can win. I'm actually picking the Royals. I loved their offseason. I think Bobby Witt is a superstar. And I just think that they've kind of flown under the radar. They made some really smart moves this offseason, added to their pitching staff with guys like Lugo and Waka. And I just like what they've done. Cole Reagans, I think, has the potential to be a top, frontline guy. But again, I think you could sit here and make every case for the Guardians to be the team that wins this division. I think it's going to be a fascinating division because I don't think any team is going to sort of, grab the baton and run. I think this is going to be a more of a marathon where you've got three or four teams kind of keeping pace with each other. And to me, whichever one of these teams goes out, well, number one, whichever team stays healthiest is going to be the one that has the advantage. And number two, whichever one seizes the opportunity at the deadline and really goes after it, could be their big difference maker to me.
I don't think it's crazy that 82, 83, 84 wins could win this division. Right. I mean, it's just that I don't think anybody's that good, really.
I had this conversation with somebody during spring training. I said, I don't bet on baseball. I can't bet on baseball. But if somebody wanted to make a bet, I would say the under 85 for the division winner in the AL Central. That would be the way I would lean. I think this is, which is why I think you can make a case for any of these teams. Because nobody's going to have to go out. You don't have to look at any of these teams as 93 win teams to win a division. I think if you get to 85, you've got a really good chance to win that division.
You know, it's so weird to not have Terry Francona managing the Guardians. I had a chance to speak to him, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago, and he was enjoying going to Arizona basketball games. And he's still working for the team, but he was staying away so Stephen Vogt could get his footing there. But, I mean, he's been such – he's really, as much as any player, been what you thought of when you thought of this team for the past decade. And now they go to a manager who everybody seems to love. But obviously, he doesn't have the experience. He just retired recently. What's the buzz about Stephen Vogt right now, and how he's going to be as a manager?
I can't say I've heard much buzz in terms of how he's going to be as a strategic manager. I mean, look, he's a former catcher. Catchers make good managers. We've seen this through the years, right? Going back to Joe Torre and Bruce Bochy, Bob Melvin, you've got, David Ross was a manager. Like, there have been a lot of catchers who have gone on to be very successful managers. Hinch. So I love the idea of catchers. They have a better grasp on the game than any other position. They're involved in the whole game. They're the only player on the field other than the pitcher who is truly involved in the pitching side of things. I think, he certainly has a reputation of being a guy people like, that people are going to want to run through a wall for, which is a good thing. And look, you don't need the managerial experience that we all used to talk about. Oh, guy wants to be a big league manager, he's got to go manage in the minors for a few years and then become a bench coach and, and then learn his way and then become a manager. We've seen, Aaron Boone went from playing to the broadcast booth to the manager spot. And he's won 100 games on average over his 5 or 6 years with the Yankees. So, first year managers who have no experience is not it's not as unusual as it used to be. I'm always of the mindset of, managers make some bit of a difference, but a manager is only as good or as bad as his team plays. And the best managers in the game to me might sway a team 4 or 5 games over the course of a season. At the end of the day, if your team doesn't perform, there's nothing a manager can do. Aaron Boone didn't change the way he managed from the first 4 years or 5 years to last year. And yet the Yankees had a bad year last year because Aaron Judge was hurt and then they couldn't hit and Rizzo got hurt and he got hurt. And, Boone was running out lineups with Jake Bowers and Billy McKinney instead of Aaron Judge and Anthony Rizzo. So what are you going to do? I think Vogt has the potential to be a good manager. He was a guy as a player who I know was always a very thoughtful quote. He always had good insight into the game. I like the hire, but again, being the guy to follow Terry Francona, not the easiest job in the world.
Mark, Shane Bieber, who's a free agent at the end of the season, and Emmanuel Clase, who's locked up for a number of years, were both names that were mentioned as possible trades in the offseason. Certainly, if the Guardians are not in contention, they'll trade Bieber at the deadline. Knowing them, even if they are in contention, it wouldn't shock me. They've done it before. But do you think they came close to trading either of those guys in this offseason? And do you think they're likely to trade Clase at some point this year if they're out of it?
I would say I don't think they came particularly close, from my understanding, to trading either of them. I mean, Clase is one of those guys who you love having him on your team, but if you don't know that you're going to be a contender, big relief arms are always in demand, especially one that's locked up that you don't have to worry about going to arbitration with or losing as a free agent. You know, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff are very smart guys, and I think it would be unlike them to at least see what's out there, right? I mean, if some team was willing to give them some kind of godfather offer they couldn't refuse for a Clase, as much as they may love him and as much as they may value him, they might look at it as, we can fill three holes in our roster with one move. It didn't happen. That offer obviously wasn't out there. Bieber, I think teams in general are looking to see him stay healthy, pitch well, look like the guy who has been a Cy Young winner before. And if he can do that in the first half and the Guardians are out of it, I think he certainly becomes one of the top three or four trade candidates by the deadline. Like you said, if they're in it, then it's a tougher decision to make. That's when Antonetti and Chernoff will have to really assess their own team, their own chances. Are they in the race because they've played over their head, or are they, you know, in the race and believe that they can actually get to the postseason? So I think Bieber's a guy we're going to be talking about a lot come June if he's pitching well. If he's not pitching well, or if he's hurt, then obviously that damages his, you know, his trade possibilities.
Mark, last thing, Scott Boras obviously has had a great reputation for getting a lot of money for his clients, but this year has been a disaster. None of, you know, all these guys, Bellinger, Chapman, Snell, and now finally Montgomery, none of them got anywhere close to what he thought, and we all thought, that they were going to get. They all signed short-term deals. Is his reputation amongst the players hurt at all by what's happened this offseason?
Well, I think we'll find that out if we see any of his clients leave him. That's really what it comes down to. If he's convinced his players that, look, there are reasons why this happened. You know, here's what the market looked like. Here's where teams were offering. And then, you know, and he might be able to keep them, and maybe there isn't a lot of damage. I mean, he is set up to have another monster free agent class a year from now, or 8 months from now.
Yeah.
You know, Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman, Bill and Cease. I mean, he's got some big names coming up. It'll be interesting to see, does this offseason impact his ability to, you know, to continue representing all the players that he currently represents? To this point, nobody's left him. To this point, I have no reason to believe anybody will leave him. His clients have seen the success that he's had over the course of his career. And, you know, there's JD Martinez into that. You know, everybody talked about the Boras 4. It's more like the Boras 5. JD Martinez, at one point earlier this winter, turned down $14 million from the Giants. They went and signed Jorge Soler the next day. And then he ended up getting $12 million with a bunch of it deferred. So it's actually worth less than that because he turned down the Giants and waited it out. You know, to me, when you look at the four guys, Chapman and Bellinger made a little bit of sense to me, only because Chapman had a very, you know, not a good second half. He's had the injury issues. The bigger issue to me is, should Chapman have taken extension offer from Toronto a year and a half ago? But again, these guys always think there's bigger and better out there. I'm sure being told that by their agent is part of it. Bellinger, he had a nice year last year, and certainly off of the years he had had previously with the Dodgers, it was a big comeback year. I believe he won comeback player of the year, but he wasn't MVP Bellinger. So the idea that he was going to get 8 years at, you know, $30 million a year just always seemed like a little bit of a reach to me. He is still in his late 20s. He's going to have a chance. If he can put up a better year this year, he can go back in the free agent market next year without the qualifying offer attached to him. And who knows? Montgomery and Snell, to me, are the two that were a little confounding. Just because, you know, Snell coming off of his second Cy Young, you figure never going to have more leverage than he has at that point. Right. Montgomery coming off of a World Series run with no qualifying offer attached to him, really thought he had a lot of momentum going into the offseason. The fact that they both settled essentially for two-year deals with an opt-out was very surprising to me, given you know, the need for pitching around the league. But it remains to be seen whether or not this offseason will really impact Boris's reputation and client list. But as I said, right now, there's no reason to believe that it will.
Mark, great stuff. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Adam.
You're in the Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, great stuff with Mark Feinsand. I thank him for joining me. Thanks to Brian Monzo for producing. Thanks to all of you for watching and listening. Again, make sure you join me tomorrow. I'll be live at 2 p.m. We'll give you my prop bet of the day. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. You hit the like button. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. Where else? But right here in the Bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers. See ya.
Thanks for listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.